Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to this virtual meeting for the Community Development Advisory Board. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dave with the Center for Learning Innovation at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, and I'm one of the producers for today's event. Before I turn the event over to our chairman, let me quickly share how to best view today's event. You have the option to change your view in WebEx. Hover over the view icon in the upper right corner of your screen. You can expand those options and change your view. Select the grid view to see the available presenters in view. It's important to note that closed captioning is enabled for today's event. Simply click on Continue in the lower right corner of your screen in the multimedia viewer in WebEx. Also, it's important to note that we are recording today's event, and it will be available soon on the CDFI Fund's website at www.cdfifund.gov/CDAB. And finally, we'll be on the lookout for a short survey, which will be sent after the meeting today. The advisory board values your feedback, and the feedback that we get from you, we hope that you'll be able to complete it. And now I'm going to turn the event over to the Community Development Advisory Board Chair, Shane Jett, and provide us with a welcome remarks for today's meeting. Shane, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Shane Jett, and I'm delighted to welcome you to this virtual meeting of the Community Development Advisory Board, and which is the Advisory Committee to the U.S. Department of Treasury Community Development Financial Institution Fund, or CDFI Fund. I'm Shane Jett, the Chair of the Advisory Board, and I'd like to extend a special welcome to our three newest members of the Advisory Board. We have Ms. Bette Brand, who is the Deputy Undersecretary for Rural Development at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We also have Mr. David Eisner, who is the Assistant Secretary for Management at the U.S. Department of Treasury, and we have Mr. John Gibbs, who is the Acting Assistant Secretary for Community Planning and Development at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. I'd also like to welcome the nearly 600 members of the public who registered to join us online today, and thank you for your interest in the important work of the CDFI Fund. Now I'd like to formally begin the meeting with a roll call of the advisory board. As I call your name, please respond with present. So make sure you're unmuted so we can hear that you say present. All right. First, we have Dennis Albert.
Present.
Dennis Albert is present. Faith Bautista.
Present.
Present. Bette Brand.
Present.
Present. Kara Dingus. Brooke.
Present.
Present. Judy Chapa.
Present.
Present. David Eisner. David Eisner, are you on mute? Okay, we'll come back. Looks like David Eisner is on mute or is not here. Dr. Greg Fairchild.
Present.
Dr. Fairchild is present. There he is.
Oh, sorry about that. I was telling that to my office.
Don Gibbs.
I guess I have to scream, but anyway, sorry about that.
There we go. David, we have you. Good to see you, sir. John Gibbs, are you present? I did not hear John's response. Are you on mute? Okay, moving to Clint Gwynn.
Present.
Present. Bob Jones.
Present.
Present. Bill Manger. Bill Manger, are you on mute? Okay. Todd McDaniel. McDonald, I'm sorry. Todd, are you here? Please unmute if you're here.
Todd's here. He's having trouble connecting via audio.
Okay. Todd's present. Ray Moncrief.
I'm here, Richard.
Hi, Ray. All right. And we know Terry Sweeney, unfortunately, is not able to join us as she's traveling back to D.C. as we speak. So let the record reflect. It looks like John Gibbs is not present. Was there anyone else that needs to be added?
We do have David Eisen.
David, yes, I have David here. I thought I just saw Bill Manger pop up. Was that Bill? Yes, I see you, Bill, with your mask there with American flags behind you. All right.
And Shane, it does show that Mr. Gibbs has checked into the meeting, so he may just be unmuted away from his desk.
Fantastic. All right. So having a quorum, I call the meeting of the Community Development Advisory Board to order. I'd like to now call upon the three newest members of the advisory board to provide a brief introduction of yourselves. So please simply provide basic background information. So Bette, would you start us off, please?
Yes. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's great to be here with you today. My name is Bette Brand. So anyway, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Right. Thank you. I have served in this role as the Deputy Undersecretary for Rural Development at USDA. I've been in this role since February 2020, so I came on board just when the excitement really started happening. But before that, I was the administrator of Rural Business and Cooperative Service in Rural Development. Prior to coming to USDA, I have served, been a long-time member or served a long time in the lending field as mostly in Virginia, West Virginia, with the Farm Credit System. So more than 35 years in the lending industry in the private sector. My husband and my home are in Roanoke, Virginia, but I am in Washington, in D.C. So just to give you a little, I know there's probably most of you on the call are very familiar with rural development. And but our role is improving the economy and the quality of life in rural America, which is very similar to many of yours, except ours is exclusively for rural. And we act on our mission through financial support and investment in business and economic development, community facilities such as rural hospitals, community fire and safety facilities, also for housing in rural communities, family and single family, and also very important is our infrastructure programs that include water and wastewater systems, electric, and of course broadband. Rural development continues to make an impact on our rural communities across the country, and much of our success is due to the teams that we have in each of our states and across those states, but also most importantly with the partnerships that we have with other federal agencies and specifically with our lenders and many CDFIs. So just a quick snapshot of what we do, and I'm really glad to be here. I'm trying to get up to speed quickly and looking forward to the discussions today. Thank you.
So thank you for your indulgence, and we're delighted to have you on the advisory board with us. Now, David Eisner, would you say a few words, please, sir?
Sure. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to join the board, and look forward to meeting all of you in person as the health environment permits. I am the Assistant Secretary for Management at the Department of Treasury. That in that role, in addition to serving as the Chief Operating Officer of the departmental offices of the Treasury Department, I also oversee our CARES Act operations here at Treasury, as well as our Office of Consumer Policy. I joined Treasury in the early part of 2018. I spent approximately 30 years in the private sector, about half of that time on Wall Street. Most of my career was at Jefferies and Company, and then I spent the last 15 or 18 years before joining Treasury as a software entrepreneur, which I had founded a number of financial technology companies. So that's the brief history brings me here to the CDFI Fund Advisory Board today. I look forward to working with all of you.
Welcome, David. We're delighted to have you on the board. Also, we have our new member, John Gibbs. John, could you give us a few words?
Are you able to hear me okay?
We can hear you now, yes.
Great, excellent. Thank you. My name is John Gibbs. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the board and be on this call today. I am the Acting Assistant Secretary for Community Planning and Development at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. I've been in my current role since March, but I've been at HUD overall for just over 3 years. In my role as Acting Assistant Secretary, we oversee a wide variety of programs, including some which are very relevant to community development, especially our Community Development Block Grant Program, which is an appropriation of $3 billion per year that goes to communities all around the country, and they can use those funds for quite a wide variety of community development activities. So that's one of our flagship programs here in CPD. We also have disaster relief appropriations, and this year we had a special appropriation of the CDBG program for CARES Act relief as well. That went out to communities all around the country. So this is in the area that's near and dear to me, and it's pretty close to the work that we do here at HUD and in my role as Acting Assistant Secretary. Before I joined the government, I began my career as a software engineer in Silicon Valley and had some experience working with both startups as well as larger companies there. So this issue of investments and the capital is something that I've had a little bit of experience with in my background as well. So again, thank you everyone for the opportunity to be on the board here and to interact with you today virtually, and I very much look forward to today's meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you all for joining us. So I'd like to start by providing an overview of today's agenda. We have a robust agenda compressing what is normally a full day in-person meeting into a 3-hour virtual meeting. So members of the viewing public can find the agenda at www.cdfifund.gov/CDAB, as in Community Development Advisory Board. So Charlie Delta Alpha Bravo. So under today's after I provide the overview of this agenda, we will hear from the CDFI Fund Director, Jody Harris, who will provide her report to the advisory board. We will then hear from the chairs of our two subcommittees. Judy Chapa will provide a high-level overview of the work and proposed recommendations from the subcommittee on optimizing impact in President Poverty Counties. Then we will hear from Clint Gwynn, who chaired the CDFI Certification Subcommittee. After each subcommittee presentation, I will call for a vote on adopting the subcommittee's recommendations. We will then take a short 10-minute break. I repeat, 10 minutes. When we reconvene, we will hear from two distinguished panels. The first panel is titled CDFI Response to Economic Impact of a Pandemic. We have invited industry leaders from 6 trade groups to share their perspective on how CDFIs and the communities they serve have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic and the resulting economic impact. The second panel is titled, What Will It Take to Rebuild and Recover? We have asked 3 thought leaders from the community development finance field to share their perspective on the needs of CDFIs and the communities they serve in the months and years ahead, and what might be needed to support those needs. After the second panel concludes, we will have a few minutes to discuss any remaining items. And if the board has no new business, we will adjourn promptly at 5 p.m. I would like to invite CDFI Fund Director Jody Harris to deliver her report to the advisory board. Jody?
Thank you, Shane. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm very pleased that we were able to organize a virtual board meeting. It is too bad we can't meet in person in the beautiful cash room, but this will be sufficient, and I'm glad everyone was able to take time out their schedule today to join us. You'll note on the public website that a formal report from my office has been prepared and posted. And all of the board members, you should have received that in your packet from Bill Luff. I'm not going to go through it because we are on a truncated schedule, but I will highlight a few things that are noteworthy at this time. So I'm happy to say that all of our program rounds are operating smoothly, especially since all of the City of Flatiron has been teleworking since March. All of our program rounds except the New Markets Tax Credit Program are in some phase of their current application review. Many awards will be announced in September before the end of the fiscal year. The Markets Tax Credit team is gearing up for their calendar year 20 round, and we're very happy that this year we have $5 billion in allocation authority, which is an increase from past years of 3.5. There are two new programs at the CDFI Fund that are currently underway. One is the Economic Mobility Corp, which is a joint venture with the Corporation for National Community Service. We are working with them to establish a cadre of service members who will be placed at CDFIs across the country. It is a competitive grant process that will be administered by the Corporation for National Community Service, and those materials will be coming out in the fall. The other program that we're working on standing up is the Small Dollar Loan Program. We received $5 million in the FY20 appropriations. We have currently had a request for information out for the public to comment on. So for those watching, please look for that on our website, and I invite the board members to take a look at that as well. We are planning to open that round in the early part of 2021. I'll also mention the certification request for information. We'll hear more from our subcommittee on the certification policies and hear their recommendations, but I do invite the public as well as other board members if you want to take another look, but please look at the certification RFI and provide your comments. That comment period is open until November 5th. I will say that has been a huge achievement for the CDFI Fund. There are a number of people who put in a lot of time and effort over the last few years to develop the certification application, a new data collection, as well as enhance our current data collection. So I want to say thank you to everyone at the CDFI Fund who helped put that together. We're really proud of that work, and I look forward to hearing the subcommittee's recommendations. And lastly, I'll just make a note about where we are right now with the pandemic. As I mentioned, the CDFI Fund has been working remotely since March. I'm really just pleased in very, very honored to work with such a team that was able to work remotely and jump in and keep our operations and our programs going over the last 6 months. We know that CDFIs are facing tremendous challenges, as well as other community development organizations that are working in our communities to make sure that people have resources and access to the capital that they need. We have received a number of letters from some of the industry groups, as well as individual CDFIs asking for certain accommodations or certain changes to policies to accommodate them during this time. Right now, we're looking at everything on a case-by-case basis. So if you are a CDFI and you're watching, please use your AMIS service request to contact the appropriate group to talk about whatever issue you're having related to COVID-19. And for those who have submitted letters to us, we are looking at those. We are considering every request, and any broad policy changes will be communicated to the industry in a timely fashion. So I appreciate your patience with us as we work through this. And again, I thank my team and my staff for really digging in and maintaining the current operations that they have at the level that they have. And I appreciate the board again for coming together virtually to have the meeting. So that concludes my director report. I don't know, Shane, if we have time for questions. Maybe not. But I'm happy to answer any if we do. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Director Harris? Seeing no questions, thank you, Director Harris, for your report. We will now transition to our subcommittee presentations. The advisory board is statutorily mandated, and its purpose is to provide advice to the director of the CDFI Fund on policies of the CDFI Fund regarding activities outlined under its authorization statute. One way we do that is through the formation of subcommittees. Today we will hear presentations from chairs of the two existing subcommittees who will provide a high-level overview of their work. In accordance with Federal Advisory Committee Act, the recommendations developed by these subcommittees are being presented to the full advisory board today for its consideration and deliberation. Once approved, these recommendations will then be presented as advice to the director of the CDFI fund, and these subcommittees will then be terminated. I'd like to call upon committee member or committee chair Judy Chapa, who's the chair of the Persistent Poverty Counties. Judy?
Thank you, Shane, and good afternoon, everyone. Our subcommittee was formed at the advisory board meeting held on August the 23rd, 2018, to examine how the CDFI fund might optimize its results in persistent poverty counties. Since its formation, the subcommittee has convened three meetings. We formulated our recommendations after an initial briefing by the CDFI fund, reviewing the requests for public comment published by the CDFI fund in the Federal Register, and based upon our individual experience and expertise for which we were appointed to the advisory board. Before I get into the recommendation itself, the subcommittee would like to publicly commend the CDFI fund for consistently exceeding the 10% threshold that Congress has mandated the last several years for award recipients under the Bank Enterprise Award Program, CDFI Program, and Native American CDFI Assistance.
We cannot hear.
Deploy in persistent poverty counties.
Judy, your audio is going out a little bit. Would you like to execute the steps to have WebEx give you a call? So click on the Communicate tab at the top of your browser, and then select Audio Connection. And then you have the ability to have WebEx give your phone a call. Just enter in your phone number, and then your cell phone will ring. We hear you, Judy. Go ahead, Judy.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay. Here we go. I'll pick it up. Before I get into the recommendation itself, the subcommittee would like to publicly commend the CDFI fund for consistently exceeding the 10% threshold that Congress has mandated the last several years for award recipients under the Bank Enterprise Award Program, CDFI Program, and Native American CDFI Assistance Program deploy in persistent poverty counties. Recognizing the challenging circumstances and unique characteristics that exist in persistent poverty counties, this subcommittee recommends the CDFI fund consider creating a comprehensive training curricula under its capacity building initiative. The curricula should be comprehensive in scope and multifaceted, similar to what the CDFI created with its Building Native CDFI's Sustainability and Impact Training Series. The development of the curricula should be based upon an assessment of the Building Native CDFI's Sustainability and Impact Training Series to determine its strengths and what should be modified in light of its focus on persistent poverty counties. The curricula should help organizations assess the county's needs and determine if they should create a new CDFI or build the capacity of existing CDFIs to serve the persistent poverty county. How to identify, create, develop, and maintain a local pool, talent pool for CDFI leadership. Explore the creation of a mentor-protege program between large CDFIs and smaller CDFIs that are located and in or serve persistent poverty counties. Map out how to assess and establish intentional partnerships with regional financial institutions and philanthropic entities to create a supportive ecosystem to flourish in. Develop peer-to-peer learning opportunities within the CDFI industry, particularly among those serving persistent counties, poverty counties, and provide on-site technical assistance visits with expert trainers to help the leadership of CDFIs located in and or that serve poverty, persistent poverty counties and explore the viability of the CDFI fund, establishing a national partnership with the philanthropic organizations that would facilitate awareness of local philanthropic capacity building programs and CDFIs serving persistent poverty counties. I am happy to answer any questions that the advisory board members may have. I hope you were able to hear all that.
We heard you, Judy.
Great. Thank you. And I'd also like to thank the other members of the subcommittee, Tara, Faith, and Ray. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. At this time, are there any questions from the advisory board members for Judy Chapa?
David Eisner. Do you have any, did the task force give any consideration to what the level of funding might be for this effort, and what kind of time frame have you or the CDFI fund considered for implementation?
Actually, that was not something that we took into account, only because these are recommendations and we still need for the entire board to approve. But in terms of monetary considerations, that we rely on whatever Congress gives us. So hopefully whatever we recommend will work within the budget that Congress continues to provide for us. But we did look at the partnership, for example, working with local financial institutions at a regional level, as well as developing philanthropic relationships to help seed new CDFIs in areas of persistent poverty. And I will yield my time to my fellow subcommittee members as well. Ray? Kara, you want to add anything to that? Faith?
No, Judy, I think that you articulated that properly. David, we really need to get to a budget, but we do think that there should be adequate technical assistance available for those recommendations the subcommittee had. We just didn't settle upon an exact amount that we would use. That we'll have to get consultation from the fund itself, the staff member.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Faith, but I agree with you, David. Only money moves things, right? Unless we really put some dollar amount, and unless we also put a timeline, all these policies just policy. So I think I'm encouraging also, not just our committee, but the CDFI, we need to put a budget here on this persistent poverty program, and also for the financial institutions with this new CRA reform that the Indian countries are included on their CRA, I think the funding and the resources will be more available. As we all know, OCC's CRA has been passed, and although it will not be implemented probably for another two and a half or three years, but there's at least a guideline there that any banks that are investing on the rural areas will have a CRA qualification rating.
Thank you. I would note that maybe for for Jody's benefit in particular, that Treasury has established a couple of years ago a highly successful mentor-mentee program in which large bank mentor small banks as well as minority and women-owned banks, and it's been a very successful program and could possibly be a model in this area as well.
Very good.
Yes. I just want to add on what David is saying, Shane, because I'm actually on the committee of REACH of Acting Comptroller Brian Brooks, and the MDIs is one of the things that they want to make sure that are being helped by big banks. So what David is saying is this mentor-mentee protege program, you know, they're really working. Big banks are really trying to give some technical assistance, some, you know, white label program they have. Also the capacity building, right? Injection more of capitalization. So I think we're heading in the right direction here. So, and thank you, U.S. Treasury, for that program. I've heard about it. It's really been successful, and they're using it a lot.
It's fantastic. I really appreciate all of the insight, and I think it underscores the reason why you each were selected to be serving on this committee. At this time, the chair would entertain a motion to submit these recommendations to the director of the CDFI Fund. Do I have a motion?
So moved. This is Bob Jones.
Bob Jones, and this is a recommendation from a committee, so it doesn't require a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. They have, it has been recommended. Let the minutes reflect that we are submitting from the Persistent Poverty County Subcommittee to Director Harris, our recommendation from that subcommittee.
Shane, would you have the minutes note my, that I only received the information about this yesterday, and both task forces, and so influencing one way or the other, Treasury support, I just would like to abstain on both of them, to just have the minutes reflect that. Okay.
Very good, David. Thank you. It will be so reflected. If there are no other abstentions or comments about this section, we will now move to recognize Clint Gwynn, who is the chair of the CDFI Certification Subcommittee. Clint, are you ready?
I am. Thank you very much, Shane. And good afternoon, everyone. Our subcommittee was also formed at the advisory board meeting held on August 23rd to comment on changes proposed by the fund to modernize its CDFI certification policies and reporting requirements. I'd like to introduce the members of that committee, including Gregory Fairchild, Shane Jett, Robert Jones, Bill Langer, and Tara Sweeney. The criteria and measurements for certifying organizations at CDFI have not been updated since the CDFI Fund was established in 1994. During this time, the CDFI industry has grown and changed a great deal. In order to ensure certification criteria support the growth and reach of CDFI, foster a diversity of CDFI types, minimize regulatory burden, and safeguard CDFI certification status, the CDFI Fund began reviewing CDFI certification policies and tests applied to organizations seeking to become recognized as CDFIs back in 2016. Since its formation, the subcommittee has had extensive discussions over four meetings. And like the PPC subcommittee, we formulated our recommendations after an initial information briefing by the CDFI Fund staff, reviewing the request for public comments published by the CDFI Fund in the Federal Register, and based upon our individual experiences, expertise for which we were appointed to the advisory board. We would also like to recognize the hard work the CDFI Fund staff since the creation of the subcommittee, which has resulted in the publishing of requests for public comment in the Federal Register related to a revised CDFI certification application and two certification reports, the annual certification and data collection report, and new certification transaction level report. This has been a monumental effort and is greatly appreciated. There were 9 sections of the proposed changes associated with the City of Boston retention policy, and the test applied to organizations seeking to become recognized as CDFIs. Of these, there were 6 primary areas the subcommittee focused on during our time together. There were a number of other areas that we did note as potentially significant, but did not rise to the level of recommendations from the Community Development Advisory Board. In our review of those 6 areas, the first area of discussion was around the primary mission of the applicant for certification. The unanimous opinion of the subcommittee is that the CDFI fund staff was appropriately focused on ensuring applicants for CDFI certification and all affiliates should have as a primary mission community development, meaning an applicant for certification and its affiliates' activities are purposefully directed toward improving the social and or economic conditions of underserved people or residents of economically distressed communities. The CDFI is specifically proposing to enhance the tests associated with the mission test.
Hi, Clint.
Yes, sir.
Clint, sorry to interrupt you. I do need you to call in. Do you have your cell phone next to you?
I do.
Okay, click on the Communicate tab at the very top.
Got it.
And then select Audio Connection. Go ahead and enter in your phone number there and then select Switch. Your audio, unfortunately, was coming in kind of garbled for everybody. You don't have to redo your whole part, but maybe go back a little bit.
Is this better?
You've not switched yet. Did WebEx call you? You have to enter in your phone number and select switch.
Thought I did. No, I'll try that again.
Hey, Clint's audio is about to come through.
There we go.
Oh, so much better, Clint. Keep going.
Okay. So back up just a little bit. So the primary area that we focused on was related to the mission aspect of the application and certification for CDFI certification. We are in unanimous agreement with regard to the CDFI fund's focus on this, along with its focus on all affiliates should have as a primary mission community development, meaning an applicant for certification and its affiliates' activities are purposefully directed toward improving the social and economic conditions of underserved people and or residents of economically distressed communities. We also, the CDFI fund is also proposing to enhance the test it utilizes to verify an applicant's financial products and services align with the community development mission. This enhancement will require applicants to provide additional information to allow the CDFI fund to determine the adherence to community development mission. 4 main areas were discussed at length during our conversation with regard to primary mission. Documenting a community development's mission, a community development mission, demonstrating acceptable community development mission for the last at least 12 months prior to application was a unanimous agreement of the committee to make sure that was part of the process. The next one was alignment with community development strategy, demonstrating a community development mission and strategy of providing financial products and services to distressed and underserved communities or populations. The subcommittee strongly supported the enhancements to the application process that were revolving around this area. Thirdly, responsible financing practices. An applicant must show financial products and services do no harm to consumers by demonstrating affordability and ability to repay along with fair collection processes in compliance with federal laws. I must say the committee was in agreement with an increased level of discovery that the fund should take in looking at the products and services offered by applicants. Several members did express concerns regarding question PM 17.3 in the application, which had assigned a default measure as the criteria to be used with regard to fair practices with regard to products. The committee and several members felt that default rates for different products could vary over time due to things such as a pandemic, as well as it would potentially reduce the ability for CDFIs to do experimental products as they learned and changed products as they went through the discovery process. So it was encouraged that the CDFI fund consider some different metrics potentially in this area, also look at how those default rates may vary by product type. I think the real item here was members wanted to make sure that creativity was not removed from the CDFI's ability to experiment at the end of the day with delivery products and the types of products. I think several members of the committee made statements that, you know, the first time you put a product in the market, it doesn't always work like you want to, but sometimes you keep iterating that product and it finally gets to where you want to have it happen. So there was significant discussion there. The fourth item was with regard to affiliates. The CDFI fund is proposing to expand reporting of affiliates in the application and ensuring that all affiliate entities have a primary mission of community development, except for in the case of a parent or affiliate of a tribal government. This expands this affiliate requirement to align with the same affiliate requirement required of depository financial institutions, including banks and credit unions. The subcommittee discussed and agreed that the language should be expanded to include the exemption for Alaskan Native and Native Hawaiian CDFI applications to provide them the same treatment as affiliates of tribal governments. Additionally, the subcommittee discussed the expansion of this section to revolving loan fund CDFIs. While in general agreement with the enhanced review of affiliates, the group did discuss the fact that CDFIs who have previously been certified may have affiliates that they're associated with and that there could be challenges associated with implementing this to previously certified CDFIs. And to ensure that affiliates of applicants that are providing financial products and services continue to provide those in a community development mechanism. So those were the four areas associated with mission. The next area where there was some significant discussion associated around target markets, the proposal that eligible target market activity no longer be limited to specific maps or strict geographic boundaries was supported as a way for CDFIs to provide financial products and financial services to a wider segment of communities across the country as service channels have changed over the last 25 years. And restricting to geographic boundaries may reduce access. First, the CDFI subcommittee was supportive of that. The subcommittee spent a significant amount of time with regard to two issues. First, how regulated institutions could meet the target market test for using not just the financial products test of 60%, but also a combination of the financial products test and the financial services test. Staff was very helpful in informing the subcommittee with regard to the purpose of this. The initial act allows for this, but it had never been codified, if you will, with regard to how financial services could be used to meet the standard. There was a great deal of discussion based on the at least 50% of financial products and greater than 60%. I think the committee agrees that there should be a way for financial services to qualify. They believe, I think, the general consensus was that a number maybe above 50% would be more appropriate than 50% for financial products and 60% for services, but deferred to the staff with regard to where they would like to set that number. The second area that was had some great discussion regarding the compliance period for existing CDFIs, having compliance assessed based on a three-year average for the financial products closed and for regulated entities' financial services provided through the last day of their most recent completed fiscal year provides for management of certified CDFIs to navigate through potential cycles of activity and helps to ensure CDFI certification is retained or lost when mission and strategy no longer meet CDFI certification criteria. This also supports the CDFI fund's elimination of its current policy of providing exceptions to target market thresholds requirements, and when combined with the ability to serve outside of the geographic target market, should allow for consistent application of CDFI target market rules. And then lastly, accountability to the target market. The committee was very much supportive of the CDFI fund's proposal of 33% of governing board be accountable to the proposed target market, with at least one governing board member being accountable to for each target market. With that, I think I will close my comments and open it up for questioning, Shane.
Very good. I want to also acknowledge that we are right now in our break, scheduled break period. So let's ask our questions, and then we will move into a break period once we've done that. Does anyone have questions for Subcommittee Chair Gwynn? Be sure to unmute if you do have a question.
Or a comment from any of the subcommittee members.
Clint, this is Bob Jones.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to comment. I mean, we had some robust discussion, particularly related to the four main areas when we were talking about do no harm. I think there was some concern, at least on my part, about the potential for the interpretation of that and the unintended consequences due to the broad nature of that statement. And I think experience has taught us as we look at other products that in retrospect there could be some interpretations, but just want to caution about having a strict definition of that. Thank you.
Thank you. There was a great deal of discussion around the do no harm aspect. There can be a lot of judgmental calls around that, and we would, I think most folks on the committee would suggest that the fund take a longer look at that section of the proposal. Other questions or comments?
Yes. Okay. Unmute if you do have a question. If there are no questions, in the interest of time, this is a recommendation from a subcommittee. It is understood to be a motion to submit to the director of the CDFI fund. Are there any objections to submitting it as is? Any objections? Seeing no objections, that will be the order. I'd like to thank subcommittee members who have worked so hard on this, especially the chairs, Chair Chapa and Chair Gwynn, for your hard work. Thank you for the excellent work that you put into this. And it is now 2:48 Eastern Time, and we will have an 8-minute break. So please set your watches, run to the restroom, grab your beverage of choice. I recommend coffee. and we will be back here at promptly at 2:55 Eastern Standard Time. All right. It is now 2:55 Eastern Standard Time. So let us come to order and resume our meeting. For the next 60 minutes, we are going to hear from members of our first panel, who will be speaking about the current situation CDFIs and the communities they serve are facing as they respond to the economic impact of COVID-19 pandemic and what they see as their needs going forward. Jody, would you like to add anything?
Thanks, Shane. I'll just add that I'm really pleased that we were able to gather everyone to talk about what's currently happening without having our normal conference season or our roundtables or ability to connect We often don't hear what's actually happening in the community. So I think this is a great opportunity for the board to hear from those out in the field, and some of them are in the field, but to ask some questions. And it's also helpful to our public viewers to also hear what's happening in the CDFI industry. So thank you all for your participation.
Thank you, Jody. I'm pleased to introduce Jackson Brossi, who is the Executive Director of the Native CDFI Network. Also, we have Donna Gambrell, Chair of the African American Alliance of CDFI CEOs and the former Director of the CDFI Fund. Janine Jacokas, who is the Chief Executive and Senior Policy Advisor for the Community Development Bankers Association. We have Kathy Mahon, President of and CEO of Inclusive, who represents CDFI Credit Unions, and Lisa Mensa, who is the President and CEO of the Opportunity Finance Network, or OFN, which represents CDFI Loan Funds. And last but not least, we have Kerwin Tezdell, President of the Community Development Venture Capital Alliance. To provide a framework for this panel, we pose the following question. One, what is the main issue your CDFIs are addressing? And two, what solutions, tools, or resources are your CDFIs using to address these issues? Number three, in addition to capital, what do your CDFIs need to weather this in the short term and long term? Anything particularly innovative or new that you may be seeing or doing? And number four, looking forward, what's your outlook on the industry when the economy begins to recover? So before we begin, I'd like to remind our panelists to keep your oral statements to 5 minutes in length. And please don't mind me if I interrupt you to give you a one-minute warning or a 30-second warning. If you go over, we'll just close your microphone off and move to the next speaker, okay? So without further ado, Jackson Brossi.
Great. Thank you, Shane, for that introduction. And thank you to the Community Advisory Board for providing this opportunity and time to share some of the challenges and opportunities that Native CDFIs face across the country in this unprecedented time. Native CDFIs, like all CDFIs, are on the front lines of the economic crisis, and our members have proudly and predictably stepped up to help their communities in the time of need. Whether our members help their customers through restructuring loans for clients whose businesses were stopped for no reason of their own, whether our members drove hours to provide one-on-one technical assistance to help members navigate new programs such as the PPP, our members have all stepped up, and we're proud of that, that they've done that despite challenges such as employees being infected with COVID and continuing to move forward. Because of these, and really as Advisory Board Chair Shane Jett put it last year, our CDFIs touch pockets of poverty and create hope. And never have our Native CDFIs been more, have our Native CDFIs resources been more pertinent than they are today. With that background, I'd like to focus our comments on three areas. One, the need for an increased access to capital, as noted earlier. Also, the second area we'd like to focus on is the unequal access to the PPP. Third, I'd like to focus on fixing the lack of involvement in Native CDFIs in the New Market Tax Credit Program for the long run. First, like all CDFIs, Native CDFIs need much more capital. The Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis found in 2017 that the need for capital through the Native American CDFI Assistance Program annually was at $48 million, whereas annual appropriations for that program have remained stagnant at $16 million since 2014. While overall government spending has increased by 30% and the CDFI funds appropriations have increased by 13.7%, Native CDFI appropriations have increased by less than 1% in that same time period. I can only imagine the amount of economic growth if Congress had funded the CDFIs at the demonstrated level for the past 6 years. And that additional capital would have been tremendously helpful and used in this current economic crisis. A recently completed Native CDFI Network study, which we will unveil at our annual summit next month, found that our lenders face new challenges such as broadband connectivity in remote areas and revenue loss from restructuring loans. We urge the advisory board, the White House, and our allies in Congress to invest in this great program for our CDFIs. Second, despite goodwill and great headlines, the PPP program largely sidestepped native CDFIs. The $10 million requirement for loans in the past year for all non-insured lenders to participate as lenders in the program prohibited all but a very small handful of native CDFIs from participating and providing this resource directly to their customers. Furthermore, there were all tribally chartered CDFIs were deemed ineligible to receive a PPP loan. We urge the advisory board work with the SBA to ensure these problems do not persist if there is another PPP-type response. The third, the New Market Tax Credit Program can be an incredible opportunity to help underserved areas. And just last year at this meeting, Bill Bynum of the Hope Credit Union stated that the New Market Tax Credit Program has created both winners and losers. And one group of losers that he pointed out was Indian Country. That statement is just as true today as it was then. We recommend mirroring the NACA program to ensure that there is a floor of minimum New Market Tax Credit funding for native CDEs in this $1 billion pool. The recently published New Market Tax Credit allocation for the recent round noted that 41% of highly qualified minority or native-owned CDEs received an allocation, yet no native-owned or controlled CDE received an allocation for the past few years. Finally, I want to acknowledge the hard work of our native CDFIs across the country, from Alaska to Hawaii, Arizona, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and across 27 states. Thank you for what you do. And also thank you to the CDFI fund staff who have been responsive and have worked very hard and worked with us on flexibility. I look forward to working together. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. That was in your 5-minute limit. Thank you very much, Jackson. Donna Gambrell, you are recognized.
Thank you, Shane, and thank you for the invitation to speak today before the CDFI Fund Advisory Board. Now, I wear two hats. First one is as CEO of Appalachian Community Capital, a CDFI lending intermediary with 22 member CDFIs and mission-based lenders. These members support small businesses in rural counties of the 13-state region by providing loans, business advisory services, and other types of support. They've done an exemplary job in responding to the devastating effects of COVID-19, and I hope you'll invite me back at some point to talk more extensively about the members' work in Appalachia. The second hat is my role as chairman of the African American Alliance of CDFI CEOs. The alliance is a newly formed coalition committed to, one, closing the wealth gap that exists in Black communities and among Black populations in the United States, and two, identifying opportunities that will result in greater investments in the organizations led by these CEOs. Launched in 2018 and officially established through a memorandum of understanding in 2019, the Alliance is comprised of 37 CDFI loan funds. The Alliance now seeks to engage in a broader audience in support of its vision in three areas. We would like to grow the network of African American CDFI CEOs and strengthen their fiscal and impact capacity. Two, support institutional and public policies addressing the barriers to wealth creation in African American communities. And three, create a digital marketplace of Black-owned firms to help Alliance members expand their capacity and efficacy while providing marketplace firms with increased revenues to expand wealth creation in the African American community. COVID-19, economic downturn, and the recent mass protests sparked by George Floyd's death have illuminated the racial and income inequities in this country. Alliance members have worked to close the capital access gap for Black Americans and entrepreneurs, even more so since these recent events. For example, Hope Enterprise Corporation has issued 2,700 SBA Paycheck Protection Program loans so far, 80% of which were distributed to entrepreneurs of color. Capital Impact Partners has launched an equitable development initiative to ensure that real estate developers reflect their community's diversity and that minority real estate developers are able to participate in growth and revitalization efforts. The Black Business Investment Fund of Florida is using bank investments to ensure Black and minority businesses survive COVID-19 by providing much-needed virtual technical assistance. Even though it's not a small business or PPP lender, the Chicago Community Loan Fund still set up overnight a virtual pop-up call center for small businesses and nonprofits that routed over 100 organizations who believed they had been shut out of the PPP program. These are just a few examples of how Alliance members are on the front lines providing relief for vulnerable communities. For members to better support their communities, they need to have sufficient resources to do so. Yet too often, these CDFIs are challenged by the same issues that afflict the communities and populations they serve: lack of access to affordable capital, to technology, and to relationships that will lead to more resources to scale their organizations. The comparatively small assets of Black-led CDFIs means that these institutions attract less capital to support growth and market expansion, enhance their technology, and market their products and services, and meet communities' credit needs. To grow and thrive, Black-led CDFIs need grants and equity investments, the most difficult money to raise, to provide a cushion for operating expenses and other uses. They need greater access to CDFI funds programs as well. They need low-cost, long-term, flexible capital to lend to and invest in others. They need high-performing enterprise software solutions, and they need development services that include mentorships, technical assistance, and other forms of support. CDFIs are uniquely positioned to address the issues of access to capital and technical support. The 37 strong voices that make up the African American Alliance of CDFI CEOs have the power to affect even greater change. The Alliance will continue to work to further its mission and growth, as well as the economic growth of the communities that its members serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Thank you. Janine, you are now recognized. You may need to unmute.
Okay.
Go ahead, Janine.
All right. Okay, now can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you to Jody and to the advisory board for holding this forum. These are indeed unprecedented times. We are experiencing a once-in-a-century health and economic crisis, and this crisis has certainly laid bare the great structural inequities for Black and brown communities that CDFI serve. CDBA is the National Trade Association for the Community Development Bank Sector. Today, there are 145 CDFI banks that serve urban, rural, and Native communities. Today, I'm going to outline some of the challenges for the CDFI banks, but also highlight some things that the fund and the administration can do to help CDFIs help their communities. First and foremost, CDFI banks are retail financial service providers, and they've classified as essential businesses. So as such, they've been on the front lines with open doors since the virus hit. CDFI banks have had to pivot quickly to continue to deliver quality services while protecting their customers and their employees. Second, as financial first responders, the CDFI banks were among the earliest lenders in the Paycheck Protection Program. Our banks focused on the smallest and most vulnerable businesses. Among the 5,400-plus PPP loans made by CDFI banks, 90% were less than $150,000, and of those, the average loan size was $32,000. We believe that the best way to help businesses survive right now is to ensure that PPP forgiveness is quick and complete. We've repeatedly urged the administration and Congress to streamline forgiveness for the smallest borrowers, provide greater flexibility in use of funds, and to improve program consistency. CDFIs will be the long-term recovery partners for low-income and minority communities. Like the Great Recession, we think that this event is going to have a long-lasting effect beyond any official recession. Yesterday, the FDIC released second quarter figures that show declines in credit quality, net interest margin, net earnings. Banks are also dramatically increasing their allowance for loan loss reserves in anticipation of future losses. And at the same time, banks are seeing a surge in deposits as investors are seeking safety. To be noted that 97% of CDFI banks are small business lenders, which and this sector has been most impacted by the crisis. Anecdotally, the CDFI banks tell me that between one quarter and one third of their business borrowers experience significant disruption. They've requested loan forbearance, restructures, or been added to watch lists. We believe that the defaults and business failures are going to be directly tied to the length of the pandemic as well as the effectiveness of our federal policy response. Now, you know, I do have to say, you know, capital is the most potent tool for CDFIs to help their borrowers through hard times as well as to fuel recovery. We strongly urge the administration to support emergency supplemental funding for the CDFI fund as part of the next stimulus package. Another key tool that the CDFI banks have used is Section 4013 of CARES, and this provision, which expires at the end of the year, gives regulated lenders relief from classifying loan modifications as troubled debt restructures. This provision has enabled lenders to respond quickly to borrowers' needs. And so we strongly urge the administration to support extension of this important provision. Now, the other thing I have to say, turning to the CDFI fund, to support CDFIs, the CDFI fund is going to have to be flexible. When the economic crisis hit, CDFIs mobilized. And when SBA opened PPP, the CDFI banks responded to every borrower that sought help. You know, despite these good acts, we are distressed that the fund has been reluctant to hold harmless CDFIs that are potentially non-compliant with the target market test solely because of their PPP lending. And so I urge the director to make an exception to the target market test for PPP loans. Alternatively, the fund could declare all PPP loans as target market eligible on the basis of a national emergency.
So to do nothing would
just punish a CDFI. We also urge flexibility. And we urge on FA program compliance, and we urge the fund to give a blanket compliance waiver for all 2020 performance benchmarks. And then last, we urge the fund to recognize the challenges the industry has in terms of responding to multiple requests for public comment, particularly the CDFI certification standards. And we urge you to refrain from implementation on new requirements until the crisis has subsided. So in conclusion, I have great hope for CDFIs in their community. We rose mightily to the challenge during the Great Recession, and we'll do it again, but we'll be far more effective in responding if we have the CDFI fund and the administration's help. So thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Janine. Kathy, you are now recognized. You have 5 minutes.
Great. I would like to thank CDFI Fund Director Jody Harris, Chairman Jett, and the Advisory Board for inviting me today to deliver remarks on the community development credit union sector. Inclusive is a national network of community development credit unions with members in 46 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. Community development credit unions are locally owned and controlled financial institutions that promote financial inclusion and access to responsible lending for consumers, small and micro businesses, and homeowners in communities that historically lack access to credit. Our most recent inclusive finance report, which is going to be released tomorrow, reflects our network has originated $54 billion in consumer loans, including affordable transportation, personal loans, small dollar loans with flexible underwriting for credit-challenged borrowers, $35 billion in mortgages to low and moderate-income homeowners, and more than $11 billion in small business loans to community-based and women and minority-led businesses. Central to all of our financing activities is an emphasis on financial coaching and technical assistance to help ensure that borrowers are successful with the financial tools that the credit unions are providing them. CDFI credit unions are community hubs. They are centers in their communities, and they have been constantly innovating to respond to community needs. During this pandemic, community development credit unions have extended loan payment deferments to their borrowers to provide relief during the crisis, launched specialized COVID loan relief products to extend flexible credit to their members, ranging from $500 up to $2,500 at low or no interest, waived fees and enabled early withdrawals of CDs, engaged in rapid deployment of digital banking tools to serve members and to open new accounts remotely for those receiving the federal stimulus checks and needing a place for those checks to go, and stepped up outreach to members with financial coaching support to help them navigate their new financial reality. In addition to this robust consumer lending response, CDCU stepped onto the forefront as well as their other CDFI partners in delivering support to small businesses under the Paycheck Protection Program. Despite the many challenges small lenders encountered first accessing and then using the PPP, CDCU's originated over $1 billion in PPP loans to more than 17,000 small businesses, with an average loan of under $60,000. Inclusive members originated 1 to 5 times their annual volume of business loans in less than 2 months, and in some cases deployed up to 20% or more of their total asset base while quickly growing their deposits in order to meet the demand in their communities. So the question of what is needed to weather this moment. And before addressing what else is needed beyond capital, I do want to emphasize just how important capital is right now for community development lenders to weather this storm. Our inclusive capital team conducted a shock test analysis looking at the last financial crisis, and we found that following periods of economic shock, like the one we're in now, we do see periods of consolidation, particularly institutions under $100 million in assets. And in looking at what works, we see that those institutions that were able to raise capital could fuel lending to grow their way through these crises. So the injection of capital is essential at this point in time. Under the last crisis, the Treasury CDCI program under TARP, we were able to show that every dollar of secondary capital that was invested in a credit union leveraged 60 times over more lending in the communities in a just a 5-year period. It's also important to note that 90% of African American credit unions have assets under $100 million. And therefore, for us, it's essential that we are targeting capital to these institutions to make sure we are weathering this storm with the capital needed. But in addition to capital, we believe the CDFI Fund is the federal program best positioned to address things like the racial wealth divide by specifically designing and supporting programs that address the needs of consumers, homeowners, and businesses of color. The CDFI Fund can make considerable progress in helping the CDFI field close the racial wealth divide and ensure greater resiliency in our communities. Specifically, in the written testimony, we identify numerous ways the fund can work towards closing the racial wealth gap by supporting minority businesses with more than just capital, with helping CDFIs deliver the technical assistance and coaching support that small businesses need, to provide and coordinate with other agencies for ongoing loan guarantee and forgiveness programs, particularly for minority entrepreneurs, supporting home ownership initiatives, and right now providing flexible tools that will allow homeowners to weather this storm and work through creative ways and creative workout solutions. And finally, access to small dollar emergency loans. Part and parcel of that is wrapping around considerable financial coaching with that. Next, the fund has a unique opportunity to continue to build CDFI banking through technology. The pandemic has demonstrated the failure of large banks, unfortunately, of reaching small businesses and particularly minority-owned businesses. Community-based lenders such as CDFIs and minority depositories can and do fulfill that role, but they need, in addition to the capital, technical support and the platforms to keep pace with evolving financial services systems. So we call upon the fund to work with us to help establish a CDFI technology initiative that would establish platforms and enable greater access and greater delivery of technology, of services through technology platforms for MDIs and CDFIs. Finally, there's considerable data that we are collecting, and it's critical that we can use that data to better support our business. We believe there's strong and important efforts to build robust tests for CDFI certification, but we have to address obstacles to participation in the fund's program and through the certification process. Our written testimony identifies areas where we've seen a considerable loss of CDFIs. About 103 credit unions have once held CDFI certification and no longer do. and that's highly concentrated among minority depository institutions. So we have to find more robust platforms and on-ramps.
Hi, Kathy.
Institutions. Hi.
Hi, Kathy. Go ahead, Shane.
Okay, so we've exceeded our time by 2 minutes. Thank you, Janine, and I really appreciate your passion. Lisa Mensa, you're now recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Jett, and thank you, Director Harris, and it's a pleasure to be here. These are serious, serious times for our country. And the way I get up in the morning is to be inspired by how CDFIs are truly stepping up to meet the tremendous needs in our communities. This is a moment when we are proving ourselves to be the financial first responders that America needs. And what do I mean by that? Before government programs started, we, the CDFIs, started to lean in to ask our borrowers what they needed to get to through these moments. And when you asked us about the issues and our perspective on the current moment, we can say that we leaned in hard. The other thing that happened, which you've heard in all of my colleagues' testimony, is our partnership role with the PPP program. This was a big moment for our industry. CDFIs became valuable lenders in the Paycheck Protection Program. And even though we were initially, many of us left out, we stepped up. And what you've heard already is the tremendous progress. We were recognized for our specialized expertise, for the way we reached deep into our communities and reached those smaller, those minority, those women, those veteran-owned businesses. And I think you've heard about this. You asked us to talk about some of the solutions that we put in place. Some of those happened before we were part of the PPP program and other programs that the government has enacted. But also I want to speak about the partnerships that have happened within CDFIs. Even before some of our CDFIs were qualified to deliver the PPP dollars, they started partnering. And all of this was so important. But I want to break quickly, I know time is pressing, to what we need. And this is a moment when we need flexibility. I want to come back to where Janine Jacobs spoke. And I want to say that flexibility is one of the key things the fund can give us now. Yes, everyone has spoken to capital. And this is our primary task. And we are so, OFN is advocating with others for the $1 billion of emergency funding from the CDFI fund. And we have new private partnerships which are making this capital possible. But what we can do right now within the power of this agency is to give more flexibility. Other federal agencies, SBA, HUD, the Department of Agriculture, have implemented broad policy and program changes. And we are dismayed that the CDFI fund hasn't demonstrated the same level of flexibility. They've chosen to do the harder work of one-by-one, case-by-case changes. And this is a moment when we need quicker, broad policy changes. Most recently, we've asked, all of the associations have submitted a joint letter asking the fund to create a temporary COVID-19 impacted business target market for CDFIs that made those PPP loans and other emergency loans in response to the crisis. And here's where we need quick action on this recommendation. This was a huge national emergency. We're still in it. And positioning us for the recovery means we need this flexibility now. So I urge the committee, I know you have it within your power, and I urge you to take this request of ours seriously. You asked us to think about where we're headed in the future. And this is where I think we need to use our name associated with this recovery. Recovery needs CDFIs. And this is where, as we go through the next year, we can help mitigate economic suffering. This is what we do so well. This is why we have had this kind of mission test. But to meet this moment, we have to grow, and we need to be in position to do the work America needs us. So I urge the fund to respond to the requests of this industry. We've asked for flexibility, and we've asked you to, as an administration, to support our requests for growth in our futures. and I look forward to working with the fund, with the advisors in the future to strengthen this industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Kerwin, you are now recognized for 5 minutes.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Thanks to the advisory board and to the fund for inviting us here. So Community Development Venture Capital Alliance, we're the venture capital folks. We provide equity financing for businesses, and particularly that flexible equity, the flexible equity dollars that help businesses start up and grow rapidly so that they can create significant numbers of good jobs in low-income communities. I certainly echo everything that's been said here of the disastrous problems that the communities we serve are going through, and we've heard this from our members, but I want to spend my very brief time talking about opportunity, because that's something, as we've held discussions with our funds, as we've surveyed them and webinars and so forth, we're hearing now is the opportunities for businesses coming through this crisis. Perhaps it's in the DNA of the venture capitalist to be thinking into the future, thinking about opportunities, but we're certainly hearing that from our members, and certainly a great need for capital to meet these opportunities, because nobody knows what the economy is going to look like 5 years, 10 years after COVID, but one thing that's certain is that it's going to be different. And there are certainly threats out there for local communities. Think, you know, Amazon versus the local retailer. Think Netflix versus the local theater. So I think as CDFIs and as community development venture capital funds, we have a responsibility to think about, you know, how can we work with local communities to make local economies work for low-income people. And in particular, I think we need to give entrepreneurs, business owners, the tools that they need to pivot from a current business model that may not may have been foreclosed because of COVID to a different business model, to give opportunity to give entrepreneurs the opportunity to move into new markets, to take advantage of new opportunities, and to be able to do that. They need, one thing they need is equity risk, nimble equity risk capital. David Eisner, I heard you say you're a software entrepreneur. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about here. I think this is a particularly important role for government and particularly for the CDFI fund. Having lived through the Great Recession of 2008-2010, we experienced a tremendous risk aversion in the private capital markets. It was very, very difficult to raise venture capital funds, and in particular to raise capital, venture capital funds, where you were telling investors, oh, and we're going to take this money and we're going to invest it in low-income communities. So there's a very important role of government here to make sure that not only
We just lost Kerwin's audio. Kerwin? Shane, we may need to move on to the next portion.
All right. At this time, we'll thank Kerwin when he gets back online. I would like to thank all of the panelists. Are there any questions from the advisory board members for the panelists who remain? Questions? Looks like Kerwin's back on.
Unmute, Kerwin.
I guess I disappeared.
Go ahead.
Can I just take a minute to wrap up? So I just wanted to say one other thing, which is through this terrible crisis where many businesses have failed, we're losing so many businesses and communities. It's odd to use the word opportunity here, but perhaps we have an opportunity to change the makeup of entrepreneurship in this nation. And you know, currently most business owners, particularly of larger growth businesses, are white males. And I would challenge us to think about the opportunity here to increase minority participation in entrepreneurship and business ownership. And just a data point on this, for the last few years, we've been running a virtual platform, webinars and so forth for startup fund managers, fund managers who want to form new funds. 74% of the folks, the participants on this this platform of 90 fund managers are members of minority groups, almost entirely African American and Latino. So we're seeing tremendous interest in the minority community in forming particularly equity funds, and I think it's incumbent upon us to respond to that tremendous difference. Tremendous interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Kerwin. Sorry about the technical difficulty. At this time, are there any questions for our panelists from our board members?
Yes, Shane. I'm Faith Bautista. I really sympathize with all the speakers as a small CDFI, and the need of our business owners right now, homeowners, is tremendous. I have to applaud the PPP, though. SBA have done a tremendous job in helping small businesses. I've seen independent contractor, small businesses, nonprofit who have gotten some money and EIDL, and I'm sure it's not enough, right? It will never be enough, but I just have to acknowledge the work of U.S. Treasury and SBA. What Lisa is saying, Dana Gambrell of the African American businesses, the Indian country, what Jackson Rosie is doing, they're definitely correct. I mean, I see that, and there's got to be some flexibility. So I'm echoing them. I think time is of the essence. We cannot keep deliberating, keep having meeting. The need is there. The resources are there. And all of us are very smart. I mean, the 600 people that are watching right now are very innovative. And I'm just encouraging the CDFI Fund and all my colleagues. How can we help the people that are needing help right now? How can we do more marketing and outreach for those hard to reach? How can we change the policy now? And how can we get more access to capital? I always say, the CDFI, we're like nurses right now. We're like doctors right now. We're helping all these small businesses and homeowners. So just encouraging, from the bond guarantee, how can we help Black Lives Matters to own more homes and not losing their homes? Let's spend more of that, and more money should be coming into the CDFI fund. So thank you all, and I sympathize with you, all of you, and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Faith. I believe Judy Chapa has a question. Be sure to unmute.
Judy, is your phone muted? You're unmuted in WebEx. Just unmute your phone. Yeah, unfortunately, Judy, you are unmuted in WebEx. You just need to unmute your phone. Okay, Shane, let's go on to the next question.
Okay, do we have another question?
Chairman, this is Ray Moncrief. I have
recognized your question.
Thank you, sir. I have a question for Lisa Mensa. Lisa, I was intrigued by your comments about flexibility. Obviously, I understand Kathy's comments about needing more capital in the downtimes, and I think she's exactly correct. I think we need more capital to plug into the small business community. But Lisa, I'm particularly interested in what your most needed flexibility is. I was listening carefully to the comments that you had, but I don't quite extract from the most significant flexibility that you were looking for from the fund.
Yeah. Thank you, Ray. And I think there's two levels. One is the way that the PPP loans will count toward our certification test. We leaned in and did immediately PPP loans. It's what Janine spoke to as well. Yes. And we are concerned if there isn't a special category, a blanket category for those, that some of us risk being out of compliance with our certification target market. So that's the first level. Then the other level is something we've been asking for since late March, and that's in the traditional programs, our CDFI and NACA programs, waiving penalties for late reporting. These are organizations that have been under siege, and this is where we want some relief as much as possible. That would be in our bond guarantee program as well. That's a precious program to us, and we're concerned that there is, if we proceed ahead without any deferments or any ability to have waiver on compliance responsibilities, we will face challenges with this program. So covenant relief, collateral relief in the BGP program, work on the other traditional programs. So thank you for asking us to clarify. They are both in the emergency powers that we stepped up under the PPP and then in our traditional programs. And we do thank the fund for meeting with us individually, but we think this is the moment for simplicity, for blanket guidance that can make this simpler and quicker as we do more in a challenge time. So thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Shane, you, this Ray. Is...
Go ahead.
Shane, this is Bob Jones. Can I ask a question, please?
Certainly.
I'd like to address this to Janine Jacobs. Janine, could you comment in a little more detail about the additional challenges that insured depositories have in this space relative to prudential regulators in fulfilling our CDFI mission? And you made comments about the forbearance, but maybe you could expand a little more detail and some color on that, please.
Absolutely. That's a great question, Bob. I guess what I will say is, you know, the issue that the CARES provision, sort of the 4013, it basically provided flexibility on allowing regulated CDFIs to basically do loan modifications without them having to be classified as TDRs or troubled debt restructures. And what the challenge with that is that, you know, sort of if you have to classify something as a troubled debt restructure, it requires you to take a capital charge. And when that act by itself basically makes it difficult for banks, more difficult than they would like, to be flexible with their borrowers. So, you know, if the regulators sort of want the CDFI banks to be flexible with their borrowers, they have to be flexible with them. Now, Congress recognized this and cares when they created the waiver for the TDRs. That's going to expire on December 31st. So, you know, we would like to urge Treasury, you know, sort of to extend that for a significantly longer period of time, certainly during the period where we're going to be under significant economic distress. I also, you know, I don't know if that answers your question, Bob, but I also want to tag on to, you know, what Lisa said with respect to flexibility. You know, while the Treasury Department cannot directly tell the regulators how to do their jobs in order to provide flexibility, the fund can provide flexibility, be it on the PPP program in terms of how it treats PPP loans for the purpose of the target market test, how it, you know, handles the FA program. You know, the program, the performance goals that every awardee signs on to at the time they get their awards basically ties them to a certain set of performance benchmarks. You know, sir, but those benchmarks were set, at least for everyone that was subject to a current assistance agreement, during a time when the economy was robust. Everything has been turned upside down this year. So I would urge the CDFI fund to develop a blanket waiver, you know, sir, for all 2020 performance benchmarks.
Thank you, Janine. Are there other questions from the board? Other questions?
It looks like David's trying to ask a question.
Thank you. I apologize for that. I was on mute this time when I couldn't be heard. Just had a question for really any of the panelists. So much of the need for capital among small businesses, I believe, is in industries that CDFIs have not really largely played in. And wonder whether some of you might be able to comment on what the capacity for CDFIs, what capacity the CDFIs have for being able to invest and loan into so many of the industries that are outside of the wheelhouse that they've historically invested in.
Did you have particular industries in mind, or?
Well, no. There are hundreds of industries outside of in communities that need investment, and the vast majority of CDFI money has really gone to a relatively narrow number of industries, and I'm really not focused on any one particular industry, but rather the hundreds of small businesses and small business types that exist in local communities.
Chairman Jett, I'd love to add to that question from Mr. Eisner.
You are recognized.
Yes, I think that it's a slight overstatement to say that we are narrow in our small business or in our housing work. I actually feel of the 300 members of OFN, there's quite a span of SIC code lending. There's been a 30-year tradition of microloans in many, many different industry codes. There's been a long tradition of rural serving CDFIs that have a broad spectrum of businesses that they're lending, both manufacturing and services. So I would be happy to give more feedback on the kind of industries we have, and certainly the ability to have capital allows us to do more. But many CDFIs were chartered with a broad mission. So I did want to speak to, there is existing practice that is not, I would say, in a narrow band of.
May I add to Lisa's response?
Go ahead, Donna.
So I really just wanted to add to what Lisa has already said. Certainly within the Appalachian Community Capital space, that's what we do is small business lending. And our members use the proceeds from ACC to do just small business lending. If you ask them, they will tell you not only is the demand high, but the need is great, and that their capacity, they have the capacity to do that and would have be able to do more, frankly. Again, you need the liquidity in order to continue making large volumes of loans. We saw something very similar with the African American Alliance Group as well during the PPP process. These folks just worked tirelessly to get those loans through the door. And what many were lacking at the very end, even as they were pushing loans out at the 11th hour, was that additional liquidity to close those loans. So I think that, again, I don't necessarily agree with that definition of it being narrow space. I think it's a matter of recognizing that need also the capacity in those CDFIs, the additional liquidity to give them the capacity so that they can grow to scale.
Yes. This is Janine. I would like to add on to this. And just a little bit of context. The community development banks, about 50% of them are rural banks. And many of them are working in very, sort of small communities. And some of them are the only financial service provider in town. So as a result, that local bank, that CDFI bank, they do everything under the sun. They do the mortgage lending. They do consumer lending. They do the small business. They do ag lending. They do commercial real estate. They do it all. So I'm going to disagree with the comment that it's very narrow. But I also think, Dave, you could help us here because, you know, if you just look at the SBA PPP lending, all the lenders were required to put SIC codes, you know, in for the types of businesses that they were financing. And, you know, that data is still not available from the SBA. So, you know, perhaps you could help us, you know, sort of by, you know, asking the SBA to more publicly release that data, including, you know, sort of the SIC codes. And that way we would be able to demonstrate really the full range, you know, of different types of businesses and nonprofits that CDFIs are working with.
Dr. Fairchild, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you. I'm so glad Janine mentioned data. I guess it shouldn't surprise anyone that that for me was going to be my way in. I think one of the problems the industry has long faced is that individual units have the world as they see it. We don't have good data sets in this industry for understanding the questions that Mr. Eisner is asking. So everyone is responding from their individual perspectives without having aggregate data. Former Director Gambrell knows I used to talk about this at conferences, I don't know, a decade ago. So I think that one of the challenges the industry will continue to have is that if you really want to show your degree of impact, you'll need systematic data. Lisa, perhaps things have changed at OFN, but or some of the others. I don't need to call you out specifically, but while it's impressive to hear that there are 300-odd people providing data, unless things have changed, that's a self-selected data set, and it's a data set that is not consistent over time. Now, maybe I'm just out of date, and maybe now it covers the whole market, and it's not a self-selected data set, but I'm not agreeing with Mr. Eisner. In fact, I don't know, but I don't think anyone really knows, if I could say that with all respect. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Fairchild. Kerwin, you are recognized for a question.
Well, I was just going to respond to Greg. I mean, I think that's a terrific point and something that a lot of us have been thinking about for and trying to act on for a long time. Just a little history here. Once upon a time, there was something called the CDFI Data Project that the various trade associations collaborated in, and it was supported by the Ford Foundation, MacArthur Foundation. As foundations tend to do, they moved on, and the CDFI data project ended, and therefore the trade associations have, you know, many of us continue to gather data on our own industries, but not on the CDFI industry overall. And I think CDFI data project was tremendously valuable. I'd love to see it revived. And I think at some point several years ago, we proposed that to the CDF, a number of years ago, proposed support from the CDFI fund. And just one particular thing I'll note on that is, at least for community development venture capital funds, many of the funds, mission-driven funds, are not CDFI certified just because they haven't found the value in the program. So I would just urge, to the extent that we're going to support something like that, that we look overall at sort of the potential population of things called CDFIs that act like CDFIs rather than simply certified CDFIs. And I think, you know, through AMIS and other data gathering mechanisms the fund has, it has data on CDFIs that have received awards, but I would urge the CDFI fund then to support efforts to basically document the entire market.
If I might add very briefly to this conversation, I think it will also be important to think about it from a sort of data analytics point of view and think through the tools that would be best enable us to gather that kind of data rather than on a reporting side. So, you know, it's really critical that as we, because I think this is a terrific initiative for the advisory board to take up of how do we build this kind of cross-sectional data really across the field so we're all better equipped. But I do think we have to start with like identifying the types of tools and processes to get that data that is in a way that is going to help build the businesses of the CDFI and not just adding additional fields on reporting lines.
So this is, thank you. This is Shane, and to the question that was raised with regard to a narrow focus on lending, with the native CDFIs, I can say that we have collectively lent to agriculture, petroleum, hospitals, clinics, mm-hmm. butterfly farms, manufacturing, municipalities, mining operations, shrimp processing in Houston, Texas, chiropractic clinic in Puerto Rico, pizzeria in Maine, and a fishing boat out in the Pacific. So we're not narrow. We lend wherever there is need. Judy Ciampa, you are recognized for a final question.
It's not a question as much as it is a comment that takes into account a little bit of what everybody has been said here. I'm a big fan of the research. Greg and I have had many conversations about the lack of research and the need for more research and quantitative analysis. And Donna knows that because I've worked with and for Donna over the years. But what, where is she? I'm going by the little boxes. What Janine said really struck home. I am from an area of persistent poverty. I grew up down there. And CDFIs to me ultimately are about being resourceful for those areas that need the help where traditional financial institutions won't lend. So they meet the needs that are most inherent in those communities because financial institutions won't lend money to a lot of the small businesses there because they're high risk according to a traditional bank. So they serve the people that need it the most. And so for me, I think that that is what sometimes gets lost in the fundamental need. If you're going to say it could be anything from an all-day spa in a town of 3,000 people to a healthy food desert. I mean, it can run the gamut of any and everything because sometimes in a rural community, that's the only resource they have for starting a new business. And so that's why CDFIs do it all. I mean, they're the end all. But at the same time, if we're going to ask CDFIs, and clearly I defer to the experts because the people on this panel are the experts, I think that they're already overtaxed with all the many other things that they do. If we're asking them to collect and do research, then we have to allow and give them additional resources or give them additional staff to do that for them because they already have so much on their plate. And that's my 2 cents.
That's an excellent 2 cents, Judy. I want to, again, thank all of the panelists for providing your expertise and passionately representing your segment of a market we all care very much about. So thank you. Also for the members of the board for the good questions that you've asked. I really appreciate the passion I feel coming through. Even live streaming, we can feel your passion. At this time, we're going to transition to our next panel. So if you will bear with us as we get everyone hooked up and switch out the panelists for the next set, you may have a chance to run and grab a reheat on your coffee as Dave and Sharon gets us hooked up and ready. So we will try to be back up and running in just a couple of minutes. It is exactly 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's 3 p.m. Central. We are now resuming with panel 2 for the CDFI Funds Community Development Advisory Board. The name of the panel is What Will It Take to Rebuild and Recover? So for the next 45 minutes, we're going to hear from three thought leaders from the community development finance field to share their perspectives on the needs of CDFIs and the communities they serve in the months and years ahead and what might be needed on a policy level to support those needs. I'm pleased to introduce Caitlin Kane, who is the Vice President of Local Initiative Support Corporation, or LISC, and she is the Director of Rural LISC. We also have Joyce Klein, the Director of Business Ownership Initiative, which is part of the Economic Opportunities Program at the Aspen Institute, and Michael Swack, who is the Director of the Center for Impact Finance at the Carsey School of Public Policy, University of New Hampshire. Michael is a well-known researcher in the field who has conducted and authored research reports in CDFIs and CDFI Fund. As with the first panel, I'd like to remind our panelists to keep your oral statements to 5 to 6 minutes in length. Please don't mind me if I interrupt you and give you a one-minute warning. With that, Caitlin, I'd like to recognize you to begin. Caitlin?
Great. Thank you so much, Chairman Jett, and thank you so much to the Advisory Committee for inviting me here to present today. I'm absolutely honored. I'm relatively new to the CDFI space. I am both an economic development practitioner and also an urban planner that has spent the past 20 years being really boots on the ground, primarily working in the southeastern states and in my home state of Louisiana. So given that, most of my reflections today are really coming from the vantage point of an economic developer practitioner versus a traditional financial lens. So a little bit about Rule List. Rule List is actually part of the much larger One List network. Like larger network, we operate in 45 states and rural communities, primarily in minority communities and low-income communities. And we do so by really leveraging our on-the-ground partnerships in a variety of different areas. We do more than just invest in agriculture. As you heard from the previous panel, rural is incredibly diverse. And as such, we really drill down and do investments, target investments in our rural communities in areas of, including broadband and infrastructure, workforce development, placemaking, disaster planning, and of course, access to capital, primarily to small businesses and housing initiatives, including a lot of work in low-income housing. So I have a very unique position, like the other members of the panelists, to come today, and I was asked to pontificate upon the future role of CDFIs. So I get to be a little bit of a futurist, which is a very fun position to be in today. And given that role, I really want to take some time to really highlight and drill down on two particular areas where I think CDFIs can really be transformational. These are areas in which Rule List has been undertaking, but for areas in which I really see additional levels of expansion for CDFIs into the future. So that first area is really looking at workforce and broadband investment. Why is this so important? One of the most pressing issues for rural America today is upward mobility. Upward mobility is directly correlated to an individual's ability to access internet and corresponding workforce opportunities. Today, 44% of low-income households lack internet access. The issue is a significant challenge in rural communities. According to a recent FCC report, a quarter of the rural population lacks broadband connectivity. Why is this so significant? This is a huge issue for America's future workforce, but an issue for which I really see the ability of CDFIs to help move the needle and amplify the importance of workforce investment, particularly in rural communities and particularly in minority communities. So what is needed? CDFIs, for some, have already been working in the space, providing very vested interest in workforce opportunity programs. LISC has a model called the Financial Opportunity Center, where we really get heavily involved in rural communities through our FOC models. But more is needed than just upskilling and workforce investment. Because of the nature of the infrastructure challenge in rural communities, we really need to focus in on the opportunity of wrapping around broadband connectivity, knowledge, and know-how into our workforce plans. It's one thing to provide immediate connectivity from an infrastructure standpoint, but it's another thing to also deploy the knowledge and the technical expertise that is needed in order to navigate the internet and all the technology that accompanies it. Remember, rural America is incredibly diverse. So there's a lot of upskilling and training needed for broadband connectivity initiatives. So how do we do this as CDFIs? Well, one opportunity that I see for CDFIs is to get really unique in terms of our partnerships. CDFIs are incredibly skilled at on-the-ground partnerships with nonprofits, economic development organizations, and CHOTOs. But we have the opportunity to partner with the private sector, with corporations, and also with regional and state agencies that are specifically dedicated to making these sort of prioritization of infrastructure investment, including metropolitan planning organizations and councils of government.
I see some real synergies here. Another observation I want to make and an opportunity for CDFIs is in the disaster space. Earlier panels have brought this up. CDFIs are natural deployments of immediate capital to rural communities, specifically after a disaster. We've seen firsthand how difficult it is for many of our communities to access capital, particularly minority communities, and CDFIs have gone out beyond to make sure that we can fill that gap with immediate access to capital. But I see the role for CDFIs to go beyond that of a traditional lender, the disaster space, to actually be a full responder on disaster assistance and resilience. So how do we do this? CDFIs need capital and capacity. They need a fund to be able to augment their offerings, to work directly with nonprofits and state agencies and other organizations on disaster preparedness. On the front end, the creation of disaster resilience plans, and on the back end, to be able to help communities execute disaster strategies that were developed in preparation for a natural disaster. Funds would allow immediate technical assistance in terms of the deployment for small business grants, and also to work with state agencies that currently lack that technical capacity and know-how. So I know I am up against my time limits, and I would love to delve into the details of how we can actually do that in a Q&A. So with that, I'm going to pass my speaking baton on to the next speaker. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. That was excellent. Joyce, you are now recognized. You have 5 minutes.
Great. Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Just checking.
Yes.
We hear you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thanks to the CDFI Fund for inviting me to participate in today's meeting. As Shane mentioned, I'm the director of the Business Ownership Initiative at the Aspen Institute, and we've been working for close to 25 years with CDFIs and other organizations that serve micro-entrepreneurs and small business owners in LMI communities. And in the past 5 years, we've placed a really strong focus on understanding and addressing the needs of entrepreneurs of color. And so my comments today are going to relate mostly to the experiences and the needs of CDFIs working to support business owners of color. And those remarks are going to draw on our work in a couple of areas. One is our work to convene and support the Microfinance Impact Collaborative, which comprises six of the largest CDFI microlenders. Collectively, those lenders originate close to 10,000 microloans each year, about 75% of which are to entrepreneurs of color. And we've also been engaged in several research and evaluation efforts that are focused on understanding the experiences and the needs of entrepreneurs of color and the strategies that are effective in reaching them. And so in this moment, and as we look forward, we know that communities and entrepreneurs of color have been deeply impacted by the COVID pandemic. They've also had significant challenges in accessing relief and recovery programs. As my colleagues in the last panel noted, CDFI stepped up when they were able to, and thanks to the hard work of the associations and the trade associations on the last panel, it took some work to get all of them or many of them active in the PPP in particular. They stepped up to play a key role in reaching those who were being left out. So as we look to support small businesses during this time, and particularly to supporting entrepreneurs of color, our work tells us that CDFIs and microloans are an essential part of the solution. And so my remarks are going to focus on why that's the case and on the kinds of programs and policies that are needed to enable and to scale the ability of CDFIs to offer this essential form of lending. So first, a bit about why CDFIs and microloans are important. This goes to, I think, CDFI is generally not just microlending. Delivery systems matter as much as products. We saw this with the PPP. If we want to reach entrepreneurs of color, if we want to reach those who are most excluded, we need to make sure that programs and products run through the institutions that serve them, and those are CDFIs and also minority depositories. So we need to think about making those programs accessible to those institutions, and we need to focus on the financial strength and the capacity of CDFIs as well as on the products that are being offered. The second thing I'd say is that loan size matters as well. The structural and systemic barriers that have impacted entrepreneurs of color have limited the size of their businesses. Therefore, they can only absorb so much debt. The Federal Reserve Small Business Credit Survey reaffirms the very strong demand for loans of less than $100,000 among particularly Black and Latinx entrepreneurs. So we need to get microloans out there into the communities. But while microloans are essential, the economics of microlending has limited its growth and the willingness of lenders to engage in it. And I would say this is true even among CDFIs. CDFI lenders, traditional banks as well, lose money on most business loans less than $50,000. So if we want to reach entrepreneurs of color, we need to attend to the economics of making those loans. On this front, I'd make 2 points in the current moment. One is that relief and recovery programs must be structured to incentivize and support smaller dollar loans. So, for example, tying origination fees, as we did with the PPP, to the size of the loan can create a problem. We know that many of the CDFIs that stepped in to make smaller dollar PPP loans have done so knowing that the money that they're collecting through origination fees is not going to cover their cost to originate and service those loans. So they're going to have issues to deal with later. So a couple things. The other thing I would just note, there are other reasons, but the things I want to talk about, but I would note that CDFIs that do small business lending face extraordinarily daunting financial challenges at this point. My colleagues have made a number of points about the importance of the CDFI program and the CORE program and other programs. One of the other things we've been advocating for is that one of the most effective ways to address the balance sheet stress facing small and micro business CDFIs would be to remove loans made prior to COVID from those balance sheets. We've advocated that the Federal Reserve create a facility that could do that. It would allow those loans to be restructured to provide debt relief to the businesses. We've also, through our work and the work with the collaborative, created an independent nonprofit called the Entrepreneur-Backed Asset Fund, which is currently working to demonstrate the feasibility of this project using that this idea, using private capital by purchasing 25% of the pre-COVID microenterprise portfolios of the 6 members of the Microfinance Impact Collaborative. The final point I want to make about the CDFI fund is while our goal is to really get capital out there to businesses that have been excluded and underserved, it's essential that we balance access with access to capital with consumer or business protections. And so we've been doing a lot of work on this issue at the Aspen Institute as part of the Responsible Business Lending Coalition. And I just want to applaud the direction referenced in the earlier subcommittee report of requiring attention to responsible financing practices as part of the CDFI fund certification process. And I'd be happy to talk about that, particularly the issue of using default rates as a metric when we get into the discussion period. So thanks again for the opportunity. I look forward to your questions.
Joyce, that was an excellent presentation, and you squeezed a lot of information in your time allotted. We appreciate that. Now we have Michael. Michael, you are recognized for your presentation. You have 5 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Shane. And thank you, Director Jody Harris, for inviting me. I appreciate it. So I'm going to talk for 5 minutes on if I was granted 3 wishes on how the CDFI fund could help build the field, what would I wish for? And I'm going to say these are realistic wishes. I'm not wishing for things like winning Megabucks or a pony or Cleveland winning the World Series, which is what I've been wishing for since I was 6 years old, and it still hasn't happened. So these are realistic wishes. So first, some brief background. In general, the research shows that CDFIs are, in fact, more progressive than banks in how they distribute resources. That is, they actually do a good job of targeting underserved neighborhoods and borrowers and serve borrowers who aren't served by conventional lenders and financial markets. However, they represent a tiny share of capital flows in any community. For example, in 2017, banks reported making $146 billion in small business non-farm loans under $100,000. Data from the CDFI fund indicates CDFIs made about $181 million worth of small business loans under $100,000, about 0.12% of bank lending activity. There continues to be a real need to scale the field. This is consistent with the studies that we've done and that Greg's done, others done, going back 10 years. So my wish number one is that the CDFI fund invest in building and funding an infrastructure to support all CDFIs, particularly smaller rural and native CDFIs. In the past just 3 weeks, I've talked to 3 different CDFIs, including a native CDFI, about just operation issues. Kirsten Moy said it 15 years ago in her paper for the Aspen, Aspen Institute, the New Pathways to Scale. She said, an industry of small place-based institutions with limited resources cannot be expected to scale up solely through the growth of individual organizations. The CDFI industry is composed primarily of small organizations with only a handful that have grown to a large enough size to exert influence in their local and regional markets. And none are of sufficient size to influence the market on a national level or to serve as an industry driver. This is perhaps more true today than when she said it back then. The CDFI Fund, in order to support the range of CDFIs, particularly smaller and rural CDFIs, should invest in the field by helping develop or fund an operating platform for CDFIs. Kathy Mahon mentioned this earlier, but building this type of operating platform would be much easier than it was 15 years ago. Quick example of this is the type of platform that the child care platform developed by CCA Global Partners, a group that actually Kirsten and I talked to 15 years ago about what a platform for CDFIs would look for. In 2009, they took that idea and took it to child care centers, and they now have an operating platform with 25,000 child care centers, providing them with tools and assistance on everything from budgeting, auditing, reporting, compliance, HR, job descriptions. CDFIs, particularly small ones, spend an inordinate amount of time on those operations and often don't do them very well, and it takes away from the time they are actually of doing things that they're actually really good at, which is lending and providing technical assistance to their borrowers. So that's wish number one. I talked to Denise Sayre just the other day, knowing I was going to be talking here, about the possibility. A platform could probably be developed for as little as $2 million that would serve hundreds of CDFIs throughout the field on key operational issues. Wishes number two and three are both for capital. Wish number two is the CDFI fund invest in equity instruments that could leverage the private sector, additional private sector equity investment in CDFIs, including nonprofit CDFIs. So today, access to equity capital is a big problem for CDFIs, typically sourced through grants. Our center is working with 10 CDFIs to develop a basic model to attract equity investment to CDFIs in a structured finance sort of arrangement where if the fund invested as well, it would leverage more lower cost real equity into the field. Wish number three, conceptually simple, it's cost effective and efficient, and that is the CDFI fund should look into how they could provide guarantees to help CDFIs access long-term fixed rate affordable capital through, for example, but not limited to, the Federal Home Loan Bank. The fund can help address liquidity issues faced by many CDFIs and asset liability management issues. CDFIs are constantly trying to fund long-term needs with short-term money. The fund should consider using guarantees as a low-cost way, an efficient way, to help CDFIs access the type of money they need. So again, this would be relatively low cost to the CDFI fund with very high returns to CDFIs and the communities they serve. And again, my fourth wish would be for Cleveland to win the World Series this year. Thanks again, and turn it back to you, Shane.
All right. Thank you, Michael. So at this point, I'd like to say thank you to Caitlin, Joyce, and Michael for your excellent presentations. And I would like to open it up now for any questions from the members of the board. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman, this is Raymond Creep. I have a couple of questions.
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. My first question is to Caitlin. Thank you for your presentation. I do have a question, and I think it kind of piggybacks on what Michael Swack was talking about. First of all, I am particularly interested in persistent poverty counties. Creating CDFIs in persistent poverty counties is not a walk in the park, simply because of lack of capacity. You speak, Caitlin, about creating capacity. How do you propose creating capacity in persistent poverty counties?
Thank you for that question. And, you know, I think your question really goes to the heart of what
really differentiates the CDFIs, right? And that's our partnership network. We're able to really go in to communities, particularly those in persistent poverty, in a variety of different unique ways. I can give some examples about that. But we are very good at identifying on-the-ground partnerships and having long-term relationships with those partners, assessing what their current needs are and meeting the individual where they're at, which is something that we do differently. We take the time to really understand that individual and to figure out how can we get that individual whole and wrap services around that individual, whether it's upskilling for a job opportunity and connecting them to social service opportunities to allow them to be more present, to allow them to be have a higher level of retention for the job. Whatever that issue is, we take the time to do that. And that is incredibly important. And that's why capacity assistance is so important for CDFIs. It's something that many organizations don't really take the time to do, particularly economic development organizations, right? So this is a great opportunity for CDFIs to really be able to leverage those unique on-the-ground grassroots partnerships in ways that can then matriculate and reinforce so much of the work that the EDOs are doing on a variety of different economic endeavors. An example for that, when I was talking earlier about broadband, is we're doing some work right now in Appalachia on the deployment of a digital navigator model, a broadband model, to assess connectivity issues in some of these communities. And so we take the time to really understand and doing a landscape analysis of who are the right groups that we can partner with long-term to address broadband connectivity, but also to provide the knowledge and the know-how that you're going to need to better access internet options and then everything that comes along with it, right? So access to job opportunities, access to so many other resources because that level of connection has been strengthened.
Thank you, Caitlin. Mr. Chairman, may I indulge in one more question?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Michael, this is Ray. I happen to have lived with your three wishes for the last 42 years. I happen to agree with you that we really need investment support for small CDFIs. We can talk globally about CDFIs and how important they are at the grassroots, but this kind of keys off of Caitlin's comments about capacity. There are some communities, specifically rural, specifically inner city, that don't possess any capacity. And many times some of our banks, because of regulations, no matter what that product is they're trying to deliver, whether it's a SBA 7A, USDA B&Is, all these sorts of things, there are many times that there just isn't capacity for entrepreneurs to tie into. I just want to encourage the three comments that Michael Swack made, that we really need not just to have a nice presentation at a CDFI advisory fund board meeting, but we need to put legs on some of these things. We need additional investment support for small CDFIs. We must look at some equity pieces to go in to support the underwriting of CDFIs. And I think it's an incredible, great idea for the fund to create guarantees for long-term type financings for CDFIs so they can create some sizable, scaled-up horsepower in areas that are sorely need for entrepreneurs that just are not bankable. I thoroughly enjoyed both presentations. Thank you very much.
Dr. Fairchild, you're recognized for a question.
Ray, wise as well. I can't agree further. I enjoyed both these presentations. For a little while now, I've been encouraging and asking questions about capacity building relative to dollars that would go directly into the field. And I certainly understand the tension between those two, but I think there are other people involved that recognize that the dollars on the field can be enabled and scaled by having capability across the industry. And we know that many industries move from being cottage industries to being larger collections when they think about these ways of establishing capability sets that each of them share so they don't have to deal in replication and they don't have to deal in building capabilities that from the ground up that they don't already have. So I've talked about this before, so I am greatly appreciative, Ray. I'm greatly appreciative, Caitlin, my friend from LISC, and Michael, my colleague, is a researcher. I can't agree more. I think that the organizations often feel like it's a false choice, and I appreciate that choice, but I also think for a longer-term path for this industry, we need more of this type of thinking. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Are there other questions for our panelists? Bob, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Caitlin, I want to go back to your comments, particularly relative to rural broadband. And I think one of the recent lessons that we learned in the COVID situation, particularly related to educational delivery, which is critical to changing the social and economic dynamics in rural communities, there's a complete void in many of these rural communities. In fact, one of our communities, less than 40% of the population have access to rural broadband, but now all the children are expected to be learning virtually. And so this continues to be an economic deterrent. It creates lack of entrepreneurial growth. It has an impediment on all of the functions that we try to perform as a CDFI, and our legacy landline providers have failed to provide it. There's been an absence of the utilities stepping in to provide this. I guess my question to you is, how do you gauge the significance of this in terms of fulfilling a CDFI mission in a modern economy that's so dependent upon an interconnected world? And I would like to make comment on Donna Gambrell's prior submissions, where she pointed out that in rural areas on the nonprofit and philanthropic, we get $12 per person in rural America compared to $4,000 per person in other areas. So the absence of philanthropic presence to help with this problem, do you have any comments as to how we can actually fix this and what the fund can do to be a facilitator? Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again for that question. And it kind of goes to the point of what really is the rural investment strategy, right, for philanthropies, for corporations, for all these institutions that really need to think and raise up and amplify, understand the significance of rural America and what it means to our economy, but also take a very, very targeted investment approach to really building up the economy of these rural communities through infrastructure investment. We're leaving behind in a generation, you know, just geographies of folks. And this pandemic has just magnified that the degree to which that is happening. You know, as a CDFI, we're just in the nascent stage of exploring what we can do to try to lend capacity to this. So our programs continue to evolve, which is why I had put it out there as one of these programmatic areas that I really think needs to continue to be invested in. But there's, in order to invest in something as significant as broadband and connectivity, it's going to take public-private partnerships, right? So it has to go beyond just our traditional partnerships of CDCs and CHOTOs on the ground. And we really need to start leveraging resources at the regional, the state, and to the private sector to make these very targeted investments happen and happen quickly. This is about America's workforce. And you know, as we saw through this pandemic, it's a phenomenal need and a pressing need, and it's not going away.
Shane, I have a question.
You're recognized, Judy.
Thank you, Shane. Chairman. This is also for Caitlin. You and I've been going through my handouts looking for your presentation because you made reference to preparedness and readiness. If I recall, it's a great presentation. You gave a lot of, I'm very interested, and that's my passion, rural America, because I am in rural America 50% of the time, but neither here nor there. So what were you referencing in terms of the being the readiness, the preparedness programs, and who or do you partner with or have you partnered with? Can you give more specific information, basically?
Yes, absolutely. Again, thank you for that very critical question. I think CDFIs, because we are in the game of community development and community builders, are just in a prime opportunity to be in a position of a disaster responder. What I've seen, I'm from Louisiana. My hometown is New Orleans. And so we are prone to so many natural disasters. We had a hurricane just come through yesterday and it's barreling still up to Arkansas and beyond. And what we have found time and time again is there is a lack of capacity on disaster response, mm-hmm. right? But CDFIs have shown, and they've shown through the pandemic, that they can readily deploy resources to the most vulnerable, those being in communities, those being minority areas. And we need to magnify that. But the problem with disaster recovery on the small business side is there often is not the capacity, either at the state level or within rural communities, to even think about a pronounced small business disaster response. There just isn't the capacity. So there is a lack of technical assistance and know-how on how to deal with small businesses. And then there's a gap in trying to get any resources, be they grants or loans, out the door to a government agency to those small businesses. The CDFI is in a great position to be able to partner with a community agency or the state agency to be that financial lending arm, but also to provide that very pronounced level of technical assistance to create a much more robust small business disaster recovery plan, right? On the front end, that says when we're ready for the next disaster, this is what we're going to do. We know how we're going to get money out. We know we're going to lean on, you know, X, Y, and Z financial agencies to be able to do this. And we know that we can ready up on these very discrete levels of technical assistance because we've been here before. I think CDFIs, because they're such clearinghouses of information, there's so much thought power in the CDFI that they're a natural partner to really, really buoy up disaster work.
So are you already doing some of that, like with, say, like the Red Cross? Because in doing my own volunteer work or trying to get more access to areas of persistent poverty down in South Texas, where there's I learned that there's a hesitancy for those areas that are affected to even accept any help from the Red Cross because they're afraid that they will become vulnerable to INS issues. So they don't even accept any help when it's offered to them for technical assistance, even if they aren't illegal. So I'm just wondering if you have encountered that or if you're working with, like, nonprofits or any corporations. Because I know a lot of financial institutions devote a lot of their philanthropy and corporate social responsibility monies to recovery efforts.
Yeah, we are working right now and just outside of Houston from Hurricane Maria on providing housing rehab. We're working with the Legacy CDC on doing that. Very sensitive to the fact, especially with vulnerable communities, on the trust issue, right, of working mm-hmm. with some of these kind of unknown organizations. But I think, again, that's kind of a differentiator of some of our work is that we have been in these communities for a long time. We try to make very targeted, long-term investments in these areas. And again, I can't stress enough why the CDFI is such a valuable player in disaster assistance is because they don't go away. Right. They are the community builders. And so when we're talking about very vulnerable populations and the need to establish and to sustain trust, a CDFI is a natural ally in the endeavors for housing rehab and small business development loans and grants.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you.
Are there other questions from the board for our panelists? Are there questions from our panelists to our panelists?
Shane, this is Joyce. I would actually like to follow up a bit on the point that Michael made and about the role of technology in enabling the growth of CDFIs. I'm glad that he referenced the work that my former colleague, Kirsten Moy, did on this work a while ago. The one thing I do want to note is we continue to look at the development and the use of platforms and technology by CDFIs. And I would say that in this moment, technology is critical. We saw that, how important technology was for the CDFIs that were delivering the PPP. We are moving to a new environment when things have to happen virtually. Technology will be critical. I do want to caution against the idea that we can build a single platform that's going to serve all the needs of most CDFIs. CDFIs are in very different kinds of lending, and technology can address a lot of different issues. Where I think the fund can be critical is in providing the resources that CDFIs need to be able to determine what technologies they use to solve the most critical issues they face, to bring in new efficiencies, to reach new markets, and provide them with the funding to both buy that technology and then also to continue to support it, to make the kinds of process changes you need to make technology efficient, to have the staff that trained on the use of that technology and supported in the use of technology. So partly this is really about money and supporting the capacity that's needed to use technology to really scale the ability of CDFIs to do work. And a big piece of what's prevented CDFIs has not been the absence of technology. It's been the absence of financial resources and not having to make that choice between capacity and deploying capital. So I think that's something where the fund can play a role, but it's important to be really thoughtful about how it does so.
Yeah, if I could just jump in for a second, Shane. Just to amplify what Joyce said, which is, I agree it's really about, in implementing something like this, about the process. That is, engaging CDFIs to say, you know, what do you need, how to be used. But there's also a lot of flexibility. I asked because I knew he was doing this for a demonstration of the childcare platform just last week. And I was really blown away by how efficient it was dealing with 20,000 different types of borrowers. You're right, not everything is going to be solved, but a lot of basic issues around operations. When you talk to a CDFI about, you ask them to do it, how much time do you spend? I mean, you'd probably be embarrassed I say this now, but my son now runs a native CDFI. I talk to him like a couple times a week, what does he spend his time on? Oh my gosh, the auditors were here again today, and spend hours with this and then hours filling out this application and, hours looking at operate. And then, every once in a while, it's like, gosh, I actually got time to spend today making loans. Like, I made 3 loans this week. It's amazing. And he's like so excited about it. That's actually a pretty typical experience with the small CDFIs. And I think that there's even an ability not to do everything, like you said, but within the capacity of a well-designed platform that's done by engaging CDFIs about what they need to design something that really meets a lot of needs for a pretty wide range of CDFIs right now. And I'd really encourage the fund to look at, investing in that process of how they would put together a platform and what it would actually do for CDFIs.
Shane, can I be acknowledged?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, I want to make a comment and a question. Being a smaller CDFI also, you need a capacity building, you need technology, you need consultant, and it costs a lot of money for a smaller CDFI. And, doing micro-lending, nobody wants to do micro-lending, no big institutions doing it because it costs so much money. Is there a possibility for the fund to create a fund just for the technology help, for the consultant help, to help smaller CDFI? I mean, we talk about what does it take to rebuild, right? And, we all agree that CDFI is the frontliners right now for small businesses and people of color and the home ownership. Just a thought that if we can create a fund specifically for the right technology, for the right platform lending, which is very expensive, for the consultant that's very, very costly, and have that just as part of the capacity building. Thank you.
Hi, Faith. I'll comment a little bit on the TA piece, on the technical assistance. And so all of the uses and issues that have been raised, most of them, if not all of them, I should say, are eligible under current TA grant. So if you need technical assistance to build up your technology, or if you need to hire staffing to help with a particular area, you are able to do it with a PA grant. As far as us being able to create new programs, I think it's been touched on throughout the day that we rely on congressional appropriations and authorizations. And so if there is the will of Congress to create a fund that could dedicate funding to CDFIs for technology and data and other types of needs, of course, if appropriated, we would figure out a way to implement that and get the money out to CDFIs. So there are some ways to handle the issues that you've raised within our current program, but of course, if there was a dedicated pot of funds set aside and appropriated by Congress, that would probably be more direct in tackling the issues that you raised.
Thank you, Director Harris.
Only the Congress can do it, and we ask the Treasury to allocate some funds for the fund, I mean, through CARES Act, or because if we do go by Congress, by the time it passes, it's over. I mean, we need it now. I mean, we talk about flexibility today with OFN. What can we do to encourage U.S. Treasury to put more money on these needs right now rather than waiting for the Congress?
So I would say that, you know, one of the reasons why we wanted to have these panels was to give some food for thought for the board to consider in either subcommittee recommendations or ways to move forward. And as a board, you are able to recommend certain things. I think that's something that could be put on the table in terms of how do we work within our federal agency and other federal partners to direct more resources to CDFIs. I will say, as CDFI fund director, I have not come across an opportunity to request additional funds from CARES Act, and I think that would actually have to be stipulated in some of the authorizing legislation. But it's certainly an idea that I think the board could consider and figure out if there's an avenue there.
Thank you, Director Harris. Bob Jones, you have the final question.
Well, Shane, Mr. Chairman, maybe more of a comment than a question. And I have really enjoyed the panelists and in the comments today. And as I sat here listening to all of this, I'm reminded that we're in unprecedented times. This pandemic has created exceptional stress, not only on our nation, but even more the dire circumstances in the rural communities and distressed communities that we serve. And I'm just grateful that we do have the CDFI fund, and I am grateful that we have the talent and depth of experience and commitment that we've seen expressed today. But so I think, you know, when we find ourselves under distress, we find challenges that we have. But I want to leave, you know, my closing comment is an affirmative one to the fund and its staff and for all the people that are contributing to this process. We all know we can do so much more if given the opportunity to do the jobs that we're built to do. And I think that's the frustration we all feel because we see such tremendous opportunities and we need the latitude to create solutions to serve these people in our communities and our nation to change the dynamics. And I think the pandemic, for all its bad things, has brought to light some very positive response from talented people. And I want to thank everyone for the work that they're doing and encourage the fund to help us do a better job. And I think that's what we're all striving to do. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for giving me an opportunity to comment at the end.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to serve on this board with each of you. Remember, we can make recommendations to Director Harris, but each of us were appointed by the President of the United States, and we all have our own networks within our own congressional districts, but also with our U.S. senators. So leverage your opportunities within your own network to make sure that the good news and the good stories and the challenges that we're addressing on the grassroots, on the Main Street level, is being communicated to those policymakers. I'd like to thank Caitlin, Joyce, and Michael for your wonderful presentation today. Michael, I want to send my regards to your son with his native CDFI. I enjoyed seeing you guys last year, and I look forward to hearing some really good stories from that CDFI. Thank you, and at this point, we're going to be transitioning to the closing business. So we have completed the items on our agenda successfully. All of the technical difficulties we were overcome, knock on wood. So thank you, Dave and Susan, for helping us navigate that. Do any of the advisory board members have any closing business before we move to the next item? Any closing business?
Clint.
Yes, Clint, you're recognized.
To the point that Jody just made, Director Harris just made, the subcommittee structure is something that this group could recommend we create to look at some of these issues. I would be interested to hear if any of the other members have any ideas of subcommittees we might want to create going forward to discuss some of the items that were brought up today.
Very good. And the next item is to discuss new subcommittees. So you are timely, Clint, in your comment. We've heard from two excellent and thought-provoking panels. We have a lot to consider as an advisory board, of course. Jody and I will regroup over the next few days. We'll be reaching out to each of you individually to discuss how we might be able to move forward, specifically regarding the formation of subcommittees or other subcommittees. In the meantime, please do not hesitate to call me or Director Harris, email us with ideas. That's exactly why we were appointed this, is to come up with innovations from each of our unique backgrounds and target markets that we assess. So, is there any other discussion from the board with regard to any new business?
Hi, this is Shane. I'm sorry. Thank you for that clarification. Thanks. You're right. I mean, we're here appointed because of our expertise. I just have some suggestion. You know, this is, unprecedented time, right? This is the time that all small businesses, big businesses, medium businesses are suffering. So many businesses will not even come back. So many businesses, if we don't help them now, they will fail. And the same thing with home ownership. When this forbearance is going to end September, we don't want to have the worst financial crisis. And I have a feeling that it might happen. And we have the opportunity right now to avoid that. So just a suggestion that perhaps, you know, a committee from all the advisory board to have a separate conversation with you know, some of the panelists right now and their members, and to really hear from them too, because I'm hearing from smaller CDFI, from, you know, from minority groups what they need, and maybe then we can have a better recommendation rather than just the Faith Bautista recommendation, but hear from other groups, what are the things that we really need right now, from the access to capital to the technology, specific ask. And that way we have some movement. Unless we have a specific ask also to the Congress, to the U.S. Treasury, and to Director Jody Harris, they really don't know also what to do, right? Be more specific, be more outcomes-oriented. And I think we have an opportunity to do that. Everybody's doing what they can to help and hear from them. What are the top three that's needed right now to help those business owners to come back and to help those business owners to stay afloat? What's your thought, Chairman James?
I couldn't agree more. I think specificity is something that we need. There are a lot of policymakers on the Hill that make decisions with or without our input. I think that underscores the importance of us getting that message out within your network, Faith, with each of our networks. And then, of course, supporting Director Harris, and she has to walk a tight line in her responsibilities as a director of an agency and how she reaches out to Congress. So sometimes we can be that voice on her behalf. Kara, I believe you had a question.
I don't know if it's a question, but I had technical difficulties, and I wanted so badly to thank everybody and also to applaud Caitlin's remarks around broadband being in rural Appalachia and seeing as we think not only about COVID response, but resiliency and that looking at that as an investment. So as we think about subcommittees, I'd be happy to serve on something that looks at what we might be able to do around investing there. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara. I think as we start brainstorming at the conclusion of this, as we go about the next week, you come think of ideas, shoot them back and forth among the individual members of our board, share them with Director Harris. But that's precisely why we've been appointed, is to bring the boots on the ground solution to the policy level of application. So if there are no other questions, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
I believe that was Ray Moncrief that made the motion. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. There's no need for a second. Okay, just going through my notes right here real quickly. I'd like to thank the public who has joined us today. We had over 600 that requested to participate. We had a little over 200 during the middle of the meeting, so I'm not sure if those were technical difficulties or people had to get on with their business, but we're grateful that they care about the work that we're doing and was able to participate today. We'll be sending out a short survey following the meeting to gather your reactions to the meeting, and hope you'll take the time to respond to our survey. I'd also like to say a special thank you to our distinguished panelists for the valuable perspectives you've all shared with us today, and my sincere thank you to our advisory board members for taking the time to meet today, for your work on our two subcommittees, and for your service to the CDFI Fund on behalf of the President of the United States who appointed you. The meeting of the Community Development Advisory Board is now adjourned. Thank you.